always seem to go, but you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
And that was Joni Mitchell's Big Yellow Taxi, a sort of an unofficial theme song of Ecologic from the number of times I play it to open this show. Ecologic is on every other Tuesday at 11, and I'm on every other Ecologic. And I'm Ken Gale, and this is Ecologic for December 1st, 2009, here in WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Our subject today is drinking water. I was thinking, New York City, but actually it's throughout the state and throughout the country, because we'll be talking about what's going on everywhere. And if you want more information on today's topic, there's two websites that I'll send you to, which has information, links, you name it. That's ogap.org, ogap.org. Sometimes these websites are easy. And unnaturalgas.org. That's un-naturalgas.org. A lot of information. And I'm going to do my first review of a play. I saw Toxic Avenger, and it's better than the movie, and it has a little bit of an environmental message to it. They even closed with a song about global warming. I was quite surprised to see this on a play that's not advertised as having anything to do with any environmental messages, but they snuck it in there. Some of you will go, well, that's PC. Some of you will say it's trendy, but I was glad to hear it in there. This is the month that a lot of people buy gifts. Buying local lowers the carbon footprint of your gift and better supports the local economy. The money you spend is more likely to get back to you if you buy local goods. And wherever you live, when you want to clean your local water supply at the source, contacting state reps is better than national reps. They have the jurisdiction, and since they get fewer calls and letters, yours will have a greater impact. Now, there are still people who want to make fun of those of us who are concerned about climate destruction by saying on cold days things like, well, where's your global warming now? It's another indication of poor science education that they don't know the difference between weather and climate. Weather is day to day, hour to hour. Climate is long periods of time. When a farmer plants crops depends on the weather. What they plant depends on the climate. You won't find a farmer in New York State planting orange groves or sugarcane, even if the weather that day is 90 degrees, because the climate in the area won't support it. Here is a very disturbing report on the Green Brooklyn Fair from www.grannypeacebrigade.org/wordpress. grannypeacebrigade.org/wordpress. Quote, wow, we thought, in honor of Green Week, there is a regular village of easy-up tents ringing the fountain, housing gaggles of enviros outplugging energy efficiency and roof gardens. The Green Market is laden with goodies. We're walking into the bosom of our people, we think. Wrong. There are any number of environmental types who seem to think that a discussion about peace is somehow taking the luster from their mission. Trying to connect the dots between the war machine and global warming falls on deaf ears. We move on. Predictably, those very important men in suits give us the fisheye or wave us off. Our most receptive audience is, as always, the hardworking folks who make things happen in the Brooklyn courthouse. They take our literature, ask for extras, and give us the heart to go on. Now, I know few people in the WBAI audience would behave that way. You understand the connections. But it really saps energy to hear about those things. I wonder what those so-called environmentalists who were chasing off elderly peace activists were thinking. And if you're one of them, please email me at nuffsaid@riseup.net. I'd love to hear what you were thinking at the time. nuffsaid@riseup.net. An article by Greg Clary on www.lohudson.com, that's LOHUD.com, reports a federal court denying an appeal by a Connecticut citizens group to be included in the Indian Point license renewal hearings, just like the Nuclear Regulatory Commission wanted. The daily emissions of radiation do indeed go to Connecticut, but I've noticed a tendency for the NRC to act as if the laws of physics only apply within 10 miles of a nuclear power plant. And this would be funny if it wasn't so scary, too. Reuters reported on November 27th that a group of Cuban nationals who fled their country by boat landed in the cooling canal of a nuclear power plant in Dade County, Florida, on Thanksgiving Day. No security at all there. I put a link to an excellent article on burning forests for electricity and one on the declining prices of solar panels on the EcoLinks page of the EcoLogic website. That's, and here's a long name, www.comicbookradioshow.com/eco-links.html. There's too much detail in this to summarize those articles in this portion of my show. They also have long URL names, just as long as the one of my own. So that's comicbookradioshow.com. That's all one word. And then /eco-links.html. Now, when President Obama got elected, I put a lot of my hope for improvement in national policy on global climate on this month's international meeting in Copenhagen. It's a great place to see how much renewable energy has helped the economies, healthcare costs, and carbon footprints of the nations that have made renewable energy a priority. I'm still cynical about it, though. Already, they seem to have raised the goal of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere from 350 parts per million to 450, which is a disastrous amount. All WBAI shows are available on archive.wbai.org. Some, such as this one, for 90 days, art shows for 2 weeks. Go to past guests on the EcoLogic webpage to see a list of shows that we've done, then listen to the shows that interest you. I have some direct links right on that page. That's www.comicbookradioshow.com/eco-logic.html. Also, Democracy Now! Did a show on drinking water Thursday of September 3rd, 8 p.m. On September 8th at 11 a.m., David did a show on shoreline politics with Oren Pilkey and Rob Young. On September 22nd at 11 a.m., EcoLogic was about environmental justice with Soledad of Uprose, Cynthia Mellon of Ironbound Community Corporation, and Nikki Sheets from the John S. Watson Institute for Public Policy. On October 27th at 10 a.m., Rebecca Miles and I did a two-hour special on mountaintop removal, ocean acidification, the coal industry, and climate destruction. If you're going to listen to one of the older shows and it doesn't show up on the archive page, click where it says All Shows, and you'll get everything. When your air and water is clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said. This is Ken Gale for EcoLogic, WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the internet. Today's show is on a subject that's gotten, you know, 3 minutes here, 5 minutes there, on a lot of other shows on WBAI and even some other stations. But there's too much to this issue to stop at 3 minutes or 5 minutes. So I'm devoting the entire show to drinking water and especially to the hydraulic fracturing process for natural gas. And I have two guests with me in the studio, which means I should be able to take your listener phone calls at the end of the show. And my guests are...
Deborah Goldberg. I'm the managing attorney of Earth Justice's Northeast office here in New York. Earth Justice is dedicated to preserving our natural heritage and in defending the right of every person to a healthy environment. In the Northeast office, we focus on issues of environmental health and on issues of climate change.
Annie Wilson of the Sierra Club Atlantic Chapter. I currently chair the Energy Committee for the state, and as a chapter, we have been quite involved in numerous issues, locally and regionally based priorities, depending on the available volunteers in the network and our resources. And we have been actively involved in this matter of the Marcellus shale drilling issues.
And Annie is a tireless activist, and she's been on EcoLogic several times and probably will be again. So I guess we're talking about the drinking water, and you'd think that drinking water, as precious as it is, I mean, the only thing we need more for life is air, would be protected all the time from any pollution. Why isn't it?
Well, there are laws that are designed to protect us from the most serious water pollution, but we're creating pollution all of the time. And, you know, people who go to golf courses create a huge amount of pollution. People who drive cars create a huge amount of pollution. Water pollution, not just air pollution. So we have to sort of balance off the various different interests we have. One would hope that drinking water would be very high on the scale of priorities, but there are very few things in the world that are absolute, and the protection of our water supplies is in that category.
It sounds astounding. And I'm sure that a lot of people figure, well, one of the roles of government is to protect those things necessary for life, you know, such as air and water. And we'll be talking about some of those threats now. And, of course, the one, Annie, you mentioned Marcellus Shale. What's that all about?
Well, with regard to their water supply in both the state and New York City, our system of government allows permits for pollution by the industries in general.
And you get permission from the government, they let you pollute.
Yes, that's what a permit is. And at this time, there is a serious gas rush in the state to develop so-called untapped resources within the Marcellus Shale, which is a shale
which is a type
gas,
of rock.
Yes, extraction method that is quite recent and had been developed by Halliburton. The existing water supplies are jeopardized by this industry, and at this time within the state and within the city of New York, there has been a lot of involvement with the government agencies to address this matter. I would like to add that in New York City and in our drinking water supply, we have at this time a major threat by this gas drilling. Most of our water is, it is unfiltered within the city, and it is under threat by this industry.
It's unfiltered by humans. It's filtered by nature.
Yes, it is. 90% of our water comes from the Catskill watershed, and 10% comes from the Croton watershed. And there have been a lot of state claims nearby this watershed that we will be able to discuss a little further in this program.
Now, of course, Halliburton, I'm sure they've got all these press releases saying, oh, we don't hurt the water. We never hurt the water. Is that true? Do they put out these press releases?
I don't know if they put out specifically those press releases, but what they certainly do say all the time is that there are no documented instances of health hazards or water contamination caused by hydraulic fracturing. And when they say that, you have to look very, very carefully at each and every word because it's a very craftily formed comment. What basically has happened is that the industry has refused to disclose precisely which chemicals are in the products that it uses for hydraulic fracturing. And for those of your listeners who don't know what hydraulic fracturing is, let me just back up a moment and talk a little bit about the development process. Shale gas is something that comes, as we noted before, from a very dense sedimentary rock, which can be as deep as 9,000 feet below the surface of the earth. In order to reach that deposit, the companies need to drill down vertically, down as far as almost 2 miles, potentially. And then what they do is they turn the drill bit and they drill horizontally within the layer of shale, which is a relatively thin layer of many, many different layers of rock. Once they've drilled the hole, they then inject at very high pressure millions of gallons of water, chemicals, and granular materials such as sand at very high pressures. And the pressure of this injection fractures the rock and allows the gas that is otherwise contained in very small pores to escape into the wellbore and then up to the surface. The problem is
where does the water go?
The problem is where does the water go? And what we know is that somewhere between 9% and 70% of the fluids that are injected down come back, which means that somewhere between 30% and 91% of the fluids stay below ground. And we don't know where they go. Nobody has ever done the studies that are necessary to see where they migrate and how fast they might go. We do know it comes to the surface, and there are huge problems with the wastewater, the treatment of the wastewater, to ensure that all the toxic elements in it don't go right back into our waterways or into our groundwater.
And within the state of New York, there are no processing facilities to treat this wastewater from this drilling practice. And there have been questions raised regarding the long-term viability of these installations, given that there are approximately 3,000
pounds per inch of pressure involved with the hydrofracking process, and that these wells need to be revisited once or twice a year, that the longevity of the system itself, of the well, which is probably within a foot and a half near the surface, and then several miles down is maybe 8 to 10 inches wide, that the canisters and the concrete, which would not have been cured sufficiently, and the piping cannot withhold this revisitation of this pressure time and time again. And, and we cannot verify and observe what would be a possible break, corrosion, and so forth of the system of these wells below the watershed, within the watershed, and above the watersheds.
Wow. So the technology itself, the machinery, is sensitive, and it breaks down, but nobody sort of looks at it.
Yeah, there are actually technologies that would enable the industry to check the durability of the casing and the cementing that they use. Right now, they're not required here in New York State, but that is something that we ought to require. Mm. There should be regular monitoring of the integrity of these systems. And as soon as there's any evidence that there's a breach of that, the drilling and the production should stop until that breach is cured. And if it's not curable, then the well should be immediately plugged.
Is that inspection required in any other state?
There, I believe that there are, although I can't name that, you know, particularly which states there are. It is, I think, considered to be a best management practice to ensure that there's regular monitoring of the integrity of the wells and the casing and the cementing. New York State is not by any stretch of the imagination state of the art right now. We, you know, the experts who have looked at the regulations here in New York have as many as 18 different recommendations for how they might be improved.
So people are looking into it, but nothing is required. And, of course, if it's not required, they don't do it.
Absolutely. I mean, the people who are interested in this issue need to be participating in the governmental processes that are currently underway, and they need to be in contact with their representatives to put a lot of pressure on New York State government to update the regulations. The regulations that are operative right now in New York State date back principally to about 1985, some cases 1972. They have not been brought up to date since that time. And, of course, the process that we're talking about developed in the mid-90s. So the regulations are not in any way formulated to address the particular problems that we might confront from hydraulic fracturing. We have learned a lot about that process since the regulations have been adopted. We've been able to watch what's going on in the West. We've been able to watch what's going on even right next door in Pennsylvania. And our Department of Environmental Conservation, our legislature, our governor should be stepping up to the plate to make New York the gold standard instead of behind the curve.
So now Pennsylvania, what's happened there, it's the same rock formation that extends from Pennsylvania to New York. So we can pretty much say that the same company is doing the same thing and the same kind of rock and are going to have the same problems. So what happened?
Well, the Marcellus Shale actually extends all the way from Ohio through West Virginia, New York, Pennsylvania, and down as far south as Tennessee. And although there's a lot that we can learn from the experiences in other places, there's also a lot that's going to be specific to New York's own hydrogeology. And so it's crucial that we adopt regulations that do reflect the information that we have. But it's also crucial that DEC and the industry conduct far more in-depth studies of the local conditions so that we fully understand what this process is going to do. For example, we want to understand fully where the fractures are, the natural fractures underground, so that we know that we're not going to be drilling in a place where there will be an easy route to the surface. We want to know what the directions of underground flow are in the aquifers that currently exist, whether they're shallow freshwater aquifers that people are using for drink water, or whether they're deeper, salty aquifers that right now are confined because there are no fractures but might be released when there's this high pressure injection. all of these kinds of things are very poorly understood. Resources have not been dedicated to make sure that we know what we're drilling into and what might happen as a result of this process. But the science is available if the resources were there, and the state should be imposing permit fees that ensure that there are enough resources to do all the necessary testing, all the necessary investigation, all the necessary oversight and compliance, and if there are violations, the necessary enforcement. And we aren't anywhere close to being there yet.
The companies are causing the problems, so they should be paying for the problems they're causing both before the process and if it goes through after the process.
Absolutely. There's a standard economic term called internalizing your costs. Right now, what the industry is doing is externalizing the cost. They get the profits from extracting the resource, and we pay the price if there are environmental problems. What we want...
Socialism, in other words.
What we want them to do is invest the money up front to make sure that there aren't any environmental problems at the back end. And it will be far, far less expensive overall if we prevent the harms that can occur than if we wait for them to happen and try to clean them up later.
Now, what has happened in Pennsylvania?
Well, in Dimock, there were citizens that filed a lawsuit regarding the Cabot industry that had misled them and had exposed them as a community to combustible gases, hazardous chemicals. And there had been explosions and fires as well.
Explosions where?
Within the wells, the drinking water wells of the residents. I had been...
So the water's exploding?
The drinking water wells had exploded. I had gone on site a few weeks ago to a residence whose well had blown up on New Year's Eve from the nearby drilling. And the owner of this home had explained also that a nearby neighbor's well had been on fire for about a week. And these are the type of concerns that we need to address. When there is hydrofracking and horizontal drilling, the extraction is only about 10% of the gas. So within the shale, the fissures, and so forth, there will be a shifting of the existing gas or the gas that is not extracted. And there is not any way to control or to monitor how this gas will shift. And obviously what has taken place in Pennsylvania, in the previously cited example, is a symptom of what this shifting can cause as a harmful effect.
So what's the name of that town again?
Dimock.
I think that
D-I-M-O-K, O-C-K.
The likelihood that the gas would actually, that's in the shale would move around is fairly remote unless there are fissures created for it to move in, because it is a very impermeable sedimentary formation. But what we did have in Dimock was an example of a very poorly constructed well. And there were, because the well was not properly cemented, the gas that was being extracted was able to leak out into the aquifer and contaminate the water supply. There are examples of this all over the country, what is called methane intrusion. The natural gas is principally methane. And in some places, you can turn on your faucet and light your water. And there are videos that you can see, you know, on the web of people who can light their water because of the methane intrusion. Obviously, this is not how the industry and the processes are designed to work, but if we don't have good oversight by our own regulatory agencies, this is an industry that is going to have incentives to cut corners, to move too quickly, and to take less care than is appropriate, given the seriousness of the contamination that can result.
Well, what has been the result in Pennsylvania? Have they stopped drilling because of these wells exploding? Haven't stopped.
This particular company was ordered to shut down for a brief period of time, not so much because of the methane intrusion, but because there were also problems with spills on site. But it was only for a very short period of time, and it was only with respect to the particular wells that they were drilling, and now everything is back business as usual. Pennsylvania is just now waking up to the ramifications of what it has unleashed, particularly for its drinking water supply. And it is proposing new regulations that are designed to prevent contamination by one type of pollutant, this known as total dissolved solids, which is just a fancy term for all of the stuff that gets dissolved into water. It's principally salts of various sorts, but it's also potentially heavy metals, and it may be radionuclides. The Marcellus Shale is known to be a radioactive formation, and the tests that have been done on some of the wastewaters that have been produced through this process have shown elevated levels of radioactivity that really need to be addressed, far above the drinking water standard.
Well, there's just more problems. I mean, which is, again, why I'm devoting this much time to it. You're listening to Ecologic on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. Tell your friends they can listen to this show live streamed. So if they're not in the listening area, they can still listen in on their computers. And my guests today are
Deborah Goldberg from Earth Justice.
Annie Wilson, Sierra Club.
Okay, so Pennsylvania is now waking up, but what about other states that haven't had it yet, such as, say, New York? Have things like that have woken up Pennsylvania, have they woken up, say, the governor who allows these permits?
There's not a lot of evidence that the governor is greatly concerned about what's happening in Pennsylvania or that the agency is paying a great deal of attention to this. Typically, these kinds of episodes are written off as unpreventable accidents, rare occurrences, anecdotal evidence of problems, but the agency itself, the Department of Environmental Protection in Pennsylvania, has recognized that if it doesn't address the levels of total dissolved solids that are typically found in gas wastewaters, it will essentially pollute every fresh water stream in the state within a period of 2 years.
Every single one?
All the waters in the state are not enough to absorb, through dilution, the amount of pollution that the industry is producing. And until very recently, pollution was seen as the solution. Dilution was seen as the solution to pollution. What they're realizing is they just don't have enough water to continue down that path. They have to find other mechanisms for dealing with the wastewater. They have to set actual limits on what can be discharged into their rivers and streams. Otherwise, the people of Pennsylvania will lose their fresh drinking water supplies.
And this is a perfect example of the precautionary principle, which has not been applied to industry. Industry is requiring that the public react or analyze their activities rather than proving to the public that their activities will not harm the environmental health and the social health.
I understand these exploding wells are not just Pennsylvania, but they're in West Virginia, they're in Ohio, they're in Montana, they're in New Mexico, they're in Colorado. I mean, they're just all over the place. So you'd think that we have plenty of knowledge, and yet people's, I guess, lust for information doesn't seem to go past the borders of their own state.
Well, there's actually a deeper problem. There are lots of cases, but there are very few serious, reliable scientific studies. And the reason for this is that the industry has so closely guarded exactly what it's using in this process that there's actually no way to generate a rigorous scientific investigation that can trace the chemicals that are used to the problems that are caused. So every time that, you know, you have an accident, and we see this over and over in Pennsylvania, the industry immediately says, methane in the water. Well, methane is a naturally occurring gas. It could have been there right from the beginning. There are lots of sources of methane. It's not us. And if you aren't in a position to actually trace the cause and the effect, then it's very difficult actually to prove the relationship between the two. We saw this over and over again with the cigarette industry. You know, we couldn't prove that tobacco was causing cancer, And they're
saying it with asthma right now.
They're saying it with asthma right now, and we're seeing the same kinds of problems with the oil and gas industry. So what's very important right now, and something where New York and Pennsylvania actually have been fairly proactive and have stepped up in a way that prior states had not, is by requiring that the industry disclose precisely what they're using. But they don't go quite far enough. What they get is a list of the additives, but they don't get a clear list of precisely what is in each of the additives. And even when they do get that information as an agency, that information is not made available to the public. What we need right now is public disclosure of the list of chemicals that is in each of those additives. And we need to know which of the additives are used at each site. Once we know that, then we will be in a much better position to know whether there's been a problem caused by a drill or by hydraulic fracturing. And these are different stages of a process, both of which generate toxic chemical wastes. Until we have that information, the industry will always be in a position to say, well, you can't show that this problem was caused by our process. And until we have that information, we cannot get systemic studies that will show that it wasn't only in this one case that this happened, but that it is actually endemic to the process itself.
Well, they're certainly accumulating information from all these states.
There are approximately 3 to 9 million gallons of water used for each of the fracking needs at each well, which could be fracked a dozen to 16 times or so. And within the state
so
of New York.
Each time using that much water?
Yes. So there would be, there's been a disclosure of about 250 chemicals to the state of New York. There was a recent Freedom of Information disclosure of about 48 chemicals. These chemicals include, as fracking chemicals that are added to the water, chlorides, heavy metals, and some of the chemicals as benzene, toluene, ethyl benzene, xylene. There are endocrine disruptors, and there's an issue of radon that within the state of New York has been recently disclosed as high, being released at a higher level than other states within this Marcellus Shale.
There's a video on one website, say otsego.org, of a woman who had hydraulic fracturing on her property and lost her water and her property values went down, and her family's been in the house for generations, and she knows that her kids are not going to be able to stay in the house because it's literally not livable. And so for the amount of money she got, she lost her house and she lost basically the whole history of her family. And so there's a human face. And one thing about the internet is the amount of human faces that are on this. I mentioned a couple of websites at the beginning of the show. If you go to the Ecologic webpage and you click on the subject of the show, I have a whole list of websites. Several people have come to my aid to give me more information to do this show, being glad that finally somebody's treating this thoroughly, because I think it's a little scary, and so that makes people not want to devote too many minutes because it's scary and you don't want to accumulate that much nervousness. But also you have a combination of science, a combination of politics and emotion, and it's difficult to really come to grips with this. I testified to the city council on this issue 2 years ago, and we're still fighting it. It's an amazing situation. And I asked on eBirds about information on wildlife and how this is affecting wildlife. Talk to us about that.
Well, there's very little study right now of what it will do to wildlife here in New York. I mean, what we do know is that every time a well pad is drilled, they have a cleared site of at least about 3 acres. And here in New York, they're expecting that the well pads will have multiple wells on them. So we'll have at least 5 acres of cleared land per pad. We have, of course, pipelines and access roads that will also be cleared. And if you go onto the website of the Allegheny Defense Project, there are some amazing aerial photographs of what the Allegheny National Forest looks like after gas drilling. Mm. There's just a spider web of well sites and access roads and pipelines through the forest. And here in eastern New York, where a lot of our land is forested, the clear cutting that's going to be necessary is going to very likely affect those species that need unbroken forest. If there's too much of it, we may very well eliminate some key habitat for birds and other species that don't like the forest edges. What we do is create new edges. Mm. Out west, there's been some studies about what the gas drilling has done for mule deer. But there's a lot more work to be done. Again, I mean, part of the problem that we have right now is how little we actually know. What we do know is very scary. But the fact that people are willing to proceed with hundreds and thousands of wells without really knowing what the impacts are is really much scarier. That's how you get yourself into really deep trouble that is very expensive to repair or possibly even irreparable. You know, one of the most
You can't really get radon out of the water once it's there.
Yeah, the radium, the uranium that's in some of these wastewaters, it can be removed with certain kinds of treatment processes. There are processes that will do it, depending upon the size of the radionuclide particles, but then you end up basically with a sludge. It doesn't disappear, and which has now got concentrated radioactivity. And that means that there needs to be appropriate facilities for disposal of this matter, just as there is a need for disposal of low-level radioactive waste that comes out of hospitals and other facilities that use radioactive materials. It isn't clear at all right now that the waste products that are being generated are going to those facilities. And in fact, under both New York law and Pennsylvania law, the wastes that are produced on the site are defined not to be hazardous and therefore can be treated
as... Who's defining them this way?
Our state laws are. So our state laws and our state regulations. And they're in doing that, they're following the federal government, which also does not treat gas wastes as a hazardous waste. The oil and gas industry was never brought under the control of our hazardous waste laws or our hazardous substance laws. And
the Bush-Cheney administration gave them an exemption specifically to the gas and oil industry for this, right?
Yeah, well, the industry has been outside of some major federal laws since the 1970s. What the 2005 Energy Policy Act did was give them a couple of additional exceptions, including one from the Safe Drinking Water Act and some additional protection from the Clean Water Act. There's a little bit of federal control at this point over the oil and gas industry, but for the most part, what we have to do is rely on state law. And so we are faced with a patchwork of state statutes and state regulations, and there is no environmental baseline that's required across the nation, as there typically is in the case of other industries that are likely to pollute our water and our air.
And at this time, there is in Congress a bill that would close the Halliburton loophole, we'll call it, which is the exemption to the oil and gas industries from the Clean Water Act. And so the bill numbers for the listeners, if they wish to look them up, is the HR bill is 2766, and the Senate number is 1215.
So this is national legislation. So contact your national senators. In the case of New York, it would be Schumer and Gillibrand.
And Maurice Hinchey has been very involved in promoting the passing of this bill within the Congress.
So it's Senate 1215 and HR, House of Representatives, 2766. That will protect the entire country from the loophole that Halliburton got from Bush and Cheney.
During, well, it's within the 05 Energy Act.
Well, that's nice to hear. Now, I know that Trout Unlimited is worried about the streams out west. Are they active out east?
They are. They've been involved in coalitions in both Pennsylvania and in New York. They're deeply concerned about what this process might mean for trout streams. In Pennsylvania, where the drilling is already going on, we are seeing numerous applications for the construction of new wastewater treatment plants that will deal exclusively with gas wastewaters. We're also seeing applications for modification of permits from existing facilities so that they can add gas wastewaters to the waste that they treat. And a number of these facilities are scheduled to open alongside of and are expected to be discharging into cold water fisheries that currently support trout. And these are recreational facilities for millions of people in these various different, beautiful, pristine areas. People often talk about the great economic boon that the gas drilling will be, how much revenue it will bring into the state. But when they do that, they don't talk about what we may very well lose. And both Pennsylvania and New York rely very heavily on tourist dollars in many of our parks and other pristine areas of the state where there are unbroken forests and there are still clean streams. And if we lose those, then we lose all of those tourist dollars. We lose the vacation homes. We lose the recreational facilities. So we have to look very carefully at the economic claims that are being made by the industry to make sure that they're not only looking at the short-term gain that we might have from a couple decades of gas drilling, but we're also looking at the permanent loss, potentially, of a sustainable economy, one that's based on the preservation of the resources on which we currently depend.
I'm thinking about places like West Virginia and Eastern Kentucky that have had coal mining for 100 years, and they have among the highest poverty anywhere in the United States. So clearly, mining is not good for the economy of the areas where the mining takes place. It's good for the mining companies that are not there. They just use the area, but not good for the area. And again, that's information that we have throughout the country. It's amazing that the politicians of New York State don't want to learn from the people outside the borders. And those of you who live in the areas where this is already taking place, talk to the people of Sierra and Earth Justice to find out what they're doing so you can help your own state. This is a national issue. People are saying, oh, well, it's a New York City issue because you're worried about the New York City drinking water. And, of course, the other parts of the state are worried about their drinking water. So it can be one law for everybody or one law to partition the state. New York State politicians are really good at divide and conquer politics and setting the downstate against upstate. And I'm afraid they'll do that for this, and they'll protect New York City's water supply and not protect anybody else's, thereby further driving a wedge between upstate and downstate. So it'll be harder for us to work together on things.
I'd like to address that at this time. Given that the state is within a process of commenting on the proposed draft supplementary generic environmental impact statement, and I would like to address the division within the upstate-downstate matter and the role of New York City and the electeds. And during this comment period, there have been commitments by both the city council, the Manhattan Borough President's Office, the Department of Environmental Preservation, to submit comment on the implications of drilling within the New York City's watershed. The controller had also made statement as comment regarding the impacts of drilling and the need to preserve our city's watershed. At the same time, we must protect all watersheds within the state of New York. They are interdependent.
Right.
We need to approach this matter as a statewide, region-wide, nationwide, global perspective. And with regard to the actual needs for this gas and these so-called economic opportunities, where we have not incorporated all the costs, the social costs, the health costs, the environmental costs,
the impacts on our watersheds and so forth within this industry's need for making as much profit as possible in the shortest amount of time as possible. We need to bring most interested residents to come forward and participate in this process, for which there is a deadline of December 31st to comment. And so I'm addressing the sending the listeners to the DEC website, which is dec.ny.gov. And on the homepage, you can click onto the Marcellus Shale Natural Gas, and it'll take you to the site and the document for which comments must be substantive. So the comments have to address specific issues within this 800-page document. Mm. And there have been requests to extend this deadline until end of March. But at this time, it is still as a December 31st deadline.
Yeah, a birder from New York sent me to a website with an article from the Valley Journal in Colorado about Colorado Division of Wildlife officials have seen both indirect effects leading to population declines and direct mortality in wildlife in areas of intensive natural gas drilling, especially in waterfowl. Ducks will land in reserve pits or production pits at drilling pads. The reserve pits are used for the drilling process, and the production pits are for afterwards. The water comes when they're in the production. That water is likely to contain oily hydrocarbons and toxic substances such as benzene. Elk and deer end up going to this water and drinking the water, which means you're going to end up having poisoned elk and deer. So are the hunters of New York involved in this issue as the fishermen are?
I don't know whether the hunters are as involved as I've seen the fishermen at this point. One thing to note is that DEC, in its draft environmental impact statement, has suggested that it will not permit waste pits at these sites in New York, that any waste that come to the surface are going to have to be directed into steel tanks. So
they learned something.
So they learned something. And, if these were actual regulations that were enforceable, I would get a great deal of comfort from this. I'm a little bit concerned that all of the proposals that are currently being made by New York State are going to be put forward in permit conditions. That means that each company comes to the agency and asks for a permit. And although there will be standard permits that will be presumptively included, there could be exceptions made. The agency will have the discretion to make exceptions, and the industry will have an incentive to lobby for exceptions. So one of the things that's really important for your listeners to know is that we, as I said early on in your show, we really need updated regulations. There's a difference between having rules that have the binding force of a law and permit conditions that the agency has the discretion to apply or not to apply. And what we need are new regulations. We need a full-blown, open, transparent, participatory process to get state-of-the-art regulations for this state before there's any drilling in New York.
And one that makes the cost part of doing business rather than something that's socialism.
Absolutely.
And with regard to our real energy needs within the state the state goals for efficiency and conservation, there's a 45-by-15 plan of renewables and efficiency for electrical production in the state, for example. There are revisions of building codes as green codes. We have commitments by New York City to develop its own renewable resources within the city and not require additional resources. We have the potential within the state to maximize our efficiency potential, our conservation potential, and the deployment of renewables. And the existing gas supply in New York State is 5% from within the state, and the rest is imported, much from Canada, by the way. Mm. And as we need to get towards a non-carbon, non-nuclear economy, we need to amplify our potentials and not increase our reliance on the fossil fuel industry. And
we already do without the gas. We cannot do without the water.
We have to be very wise about the decisions and the priorities that we develop in this near future, given the uncertainties of our long term.
And we're starting to run out of time already. I thought I could take listener phone calls, but there's just too much information on this issue. It touches on too many other things. So I guess let's tie up with, I want to thank our guest, Deborah Goldberg and Annie Wilson. What's your websites of your organizations?
Earth Justice's website is www.earthjustice.org.
An easy one, yay!
The Atlantic Chapter has its own website that's somewhat under construction, and I would like to direct the listeners to the www.un-naturalgas.org that has a petition on its homepage regarding the gas drilling issue in New York State. And it's very important to get a lot of signatures and a lot of public participation, and we must share our information and resources. And this is a very good website that links to other websites within the state regarding this matter.
And the websites are linked on the Ecologic webpage, and they'll stay linked. If you go to Past Guest, you can get there from the WBII webpage. You go to the Ecologic site. So everything is linked up. You can get a lot of information, and there is so much going on that we need to be active on this. So contact your national senators about S1-1215, your national representatives about 2766, and especially your state legislatures, because the states have jurisdiction over water supplies. So thanks for listening to Ecologic here at WBAI New York.
But I'm just not there when it's coming to a fight.
You go to any environmental group, any rally, and people know about WBAI. They go to these events because of WBAI. So WBAI is not a voice that can dare be silenced. We can't afford to have it silenced. It's way too important. Way, way too important. The information on WBAI is precious. And now we have Mayor Tillman on the air. Mayor Tillman, are you there?
I'm here. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Good, good. Thank you.
Now, tell us where Dish Texas is.
Dish Texas is in north central Texas. It's about 25 miles due north of downtown Fort Worth.
Due north of Fort Worth?
Yes.
Denton County?
In Denton County, yes.
Now, is the slogan still Home of Happiness?
What's that?
The Home of Happiness?
Oh, yeah, I think we have plenty of happy people here, but we have plenty of reasons for concern as well.
And what are those?
It is our air quality.
Your air quality? We've been talking about water. What's with the air?
Well, we're home to free Dish Network satellite TV, but we're also home to a very massive natural gas compression station where they have a route of pipelines that come through the community here, and there's compressor stations along the way, and they have chosen this area to put a very massive natural gas compression station, and they do some treating as well, and this thing has been putting off a large amount of toxic emissions. And so that's caused us some great concern here.
How long have they been doing that?
They started in 2005, and the site has just continued to grow since then. Since then, there is a loophole in the law here in Texas that if you don't reach a certain emissions threshold, you don't have to go through an elaborate process to get a permit. They call it permit by rule. And under the permit by rule, you can have there is no limitations to how many of these sites they can put in right next to one another. So we actually have five separately permitted sites here. And, you know, individually, they all fall under the permit by rule. However, collectively, they're well above the permit by rule threshold. And so,
they do find their loopholes, don't they?
Yes, they do. And so that's caused us to have a lot of air issues here. The town of DISH actually spent about 15% of its budget for a comprehensive air study. And in that air study, we detected 16 toxins that were above effect screening levels, both short-term and long-term. And one of the toxins that we found was benzene at extremely high levels and carbon disulfide, which is a neurotoxin, at very high levels.
All wonderful things to cause cancer.
Yes, cancer, birth defects, learning disabilities in children, things like that.
Is the governor paying any attention to the people of DISH and other places in Texas that have had this?
The governor has, for the state of Texas, has certainly made his position that he is very pro-industry. And so he's not real supportive of our cause here. He would rather see the industry thrive as opposed to the health of our citizens, I guess you might say.
Profits before people. It seems to be a common story. I mean, does he believe what's been happening to the people of DISH?
Well, I think that one of the problems that you have is that he doesn't come to me and he doesn't talk to me personally. I don't have access to him to show him everything that we have done here and the problems that we have. Mm. However, the folks in the oil and gas industry, they have immediate access to him.
Right.
So they get to go in and they get to show him their data, and they get to show him how great everything is and how everything that we've done here is wrong and flawed and things such as this. And so he makes his decisions based on half of the information or maybe inaccurate information. So that's kind of my perception of that.
So you have a bit of an uphill battle. So how is it that you happen to be coming up to New York? I've spent enough time in Texas to know that, I would think it would be political suicide for a Texas mayor to come up to a Yankee state like New York.
Right. Well, this is a problem that has affected us very negatively here. And you guys are in a position to where maybe you could not have the negative impacts that we have had. And so if I can help in that process, I would gladly do that. This isn't a Yankee thing. This is we're all humans,
right,
on Mother Earth here, and we need to take care of this. And I don't want to see your children sick any more than I want to see my children sick. And so I'm gonna come up there, and I'm gonna spend a week, and I'm gonna try and touch as many people as I can touch, and try and help you guys get ahead of this boom that you're getting ready to have.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more people like you than there are not like you. It's just that the people who are like you don't get as much publicity as the people who aren't. Now, when are you going to be up in New York?
I will be arriving on the 15th, next Monday. And I will be spending an entire week there. I'll be leaving out on the 21st.
What counties will you be in? Or do you know yet?
Yes, there is a number of venues that I will be going to, and there will essentially be a different community every day.
Every day.
And, there's some pretty wide areas up there to see, and most of it's going to be in upstate New York. However, I would like to come back and and see Pennsylvania and also the city. And I'm going to butcher up some of these names, and I just, because of the counties. I'm going to be in Cooperstown.
Ah, uh-huh.
Oneonta.
Oneonta?
Oneonta. Downsville. Binghamton.
Well, that's a lot of area you're covering right there.
Narrowsburg. Susquehanna County, Pennsylvania.
Susquehanna. Right, we have all these Algonquin names here.
Right. Elmira and Calicoon will be the cities that I will be visiting. And hopefully I can help answer a lot of questions. I think that one thing that I am not is I'm not anti-drilling. I'm not anti-industry. I just know that there is a lot of things that they could do a whole lot better than what they're doing it in Texas. And I hope that you take that into account in New York when they're writing all of these rules. And there's certainly places where this sort of activity should just be off limits. You know, there shouldn't be pipelines running through people's front yards carrying a explosive toxic substance at a high pressure that's unodorized. There's some common sense things that need to be implemented that we have not done well in Texas. And I hope that the folks in New York can take that into account when they're thinking about this stuff and maybe not have the severe negative impacts that we've had here.
I've always wondered why common sense is called that. It doesn't seem to be that common.
I'm sorry?
So I've always wondered why common sense is called that, because it's not very common.
Right. Yeah, it amazes me.
I mean, it's just, well, again, you only need one person to say yes, and suddenly there's pipes and right-of-ways and roads and everything else.
Right, and like I'd said before, the industry has the lobbyists that get the access to the politicians, to the state elected officials who make these decisions, and they make a decision based on half of the story or an inaccurate half of the story. I don't think anybody would pass something knowing that they're going to be hurting their citizens, but they just don't have all of the information, and they're not as aggressive as, for example, I have been in going out and learning everything that I could learn about it.
Yeah, one good thing of a lobbyist, you know, they may have access to money, but they only have one vote, and 1,000 citizens have 1,000 votes.
Absolutely.
And I guess that's what we're dealing with here. It's dollars versus votes. And the education, of course, gets those votes going in the direction that we need. And so people like you who've experienced hydraulic fracturing have that information to teach us.
Yeah, and I hope that I can do that. I hope that I can help everybody get a clear picture of what's going to happen. At the end of the day, that's not my decision. Whether they want it or they don't want it is up to the people. But they need to make that decision with full disclosure. They need to make that decision with their eyes wide open, not their eyes wide shut.
And well, there certainly is a buzz being created by the Sierra Club. And I guess I should take this opportunity to thank Gusty Schwartz from the Sierra Club Atlantic Chapter and Christine Black from WBAI's news department for setting up this interview with you. Really glad you were able to come on, and I'm very glad that you're coming up here and letting people know what you've experienced, because experience is a teacher.
Yes, and if anybody would like to take a look at our air study, it's at www.townofdish.com. And you can go on there and you can read the air study in its entirety. We've done a health assessment on the effects of the air study. And so all of that data is up on our website.
Town of Dish. It's all one word.
Yep.
.com.
Yep.
And you've got a lawsuit coming up or something like that?
Well, no, there hasn't been any lawsuits filed by me personally or by the town. There's a number of folks in the community that are filing lawsuits.
Oh, okay, that's it. Because I read a little article from the Fort Worth newspaper about what was going on from in and around Dish.
Right. Yeah. There has been a number of attorneys representing folks here, and we certainly have not ruled out that option from the municipal side. It feels as though we're almost forced into that. I would rather not do that, but if all else fails, we're going to get this cleaned up. And if we have to go that route to do that, then that's something that I'm willing to do.
Well, thank you very much for coming on to WBAI. And you're listening to Calvin Tillman, who's the mayor of Dish, Texas, who's coming to New York State Monday the 15th. That's this coming Monday. And we'll be speaking in a different location every day. I guess the best place to look for where you're going to be is the Sierra Club Atlantic Chapter's website.
Yes, that's probably correct. I haven't posted it up on the Dish website or anything as of yet, although I probably will post that up maybe later on this week. I'll post my schedule up to the Dish website.
Okay, so two places to look for it.
Yes, and I hope to see many of your listeners out on the roads in New York. Hopefully I can help answer their questions.
Well, I know our signal goes 90 miles, but on the internet, it goes all over the place. I've gotten email from people from Texas listening to different shows I've done on air pollution. So they're out there, and I'm sure somebody will mention WBAI when they come up to you after your talk. So thank you very much, Mayor Tillman.
All right. Thank
you. Good luck.
Good luck to you.
We all need good luck. Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. And you're listening to WBAI, an Ecologic special for this membership drive. And we're looking for you to become a member of WBAI. I don't know how many different radio stations are going to have a mayor from Texas talking about the potential of what could happen in New York State. But you got him on WBAI live. So this is not part of a premium because it just happened.